Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. This is the 1st of February. Coming up on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live, turns out there's a huge surge in Mexican patriotism. One report finds that. We'll talk about that. Also, a health tip for you about vegetable oil. It's kind of an interesting report there. And also, there's a new Supreme Court nominee. We'll have details about that. Other stories coming up, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're on 101.3 KPCG online, kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. And you can also listen on the TuneIn app if you'd like to do that. All of the programming here archived online also, kpcg.fm, and also thetrumpet.com or SoundCloud. So if you know what you're looking for, you can find it. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today as well. And you can follow us on Twitter at KPCGFM. Also, if you'd like to send us any comments, please do that. You can email those comments at kpcg.fm. Well, lots happening, Grant. There's all this talk about maybe building a wall on the southern border between the United States and Mexico. And it's created an interesting reaction here, according to Yahoo News. The headline is, Viva Mexico, Trump Wall Awakens Mexican Patriotism. So it's kind of interesting to me because, as this article points out, I guess in retaliation to this idea of putting a wall up there on the border, the Mexicans are replacing profile pictures on their social media with their country's flag. Others are calling for boycotts of American products like Coca-Cola and Starbucks. Just be good for their health, I guess. They say U.S. President Donald Trump's vow to make Mexicans pay for a massive border wall has not only caused a diplomatic row, it has sparked patriotic fervor south of the border. On Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, people are using the hashtag #WeAreAllMexico, punctuating anti-Trump tweets with cries of Viva Mexico and boasting that they live in the best country in the world. So when I see this, I think, okay, so we're all in agreement, right? Stay in your country. You can come visit, which is great, but then just go back to where you live because they're saying it's the greatest country in the world. The whole idea of a border wall is to prevent people from streaming illegally out of the country, and that's why they even have to have an idea about potentially putting one there. So their response is to say, you know, Mexico's the greatest country in the world. It just seems like, well, which side is it? Like, if that's the case and that's how you feel, then we are all in agreement and we can move on, right?
That's a really tough one to figure out because wouldn't he be supporting Mexican patriotism by building the wall if they all thought that they should be there and just stay there in the first place?
Yeah, I don't get the... It's like a lot of the stories that come up in the news these days where there's these protests against whatever's happening, most of it against the Trump administration. Like at some point, it doesn't even make sense. They're almost protesting themselves, sort of. I mean, if no one wanted to illegally come here, there'd be no need for a wall. Nobody wants to build a wall just to have one.
Right.
It's to prevent this onslaught of illegal activity coming through across the border. But they respond to it in protest against it by saying, we live in the greatest country in the world. We are all Mexico, and we're going to boycott your products. Okay. I mean, again, I think we're in agreement. Right,
it's almost hard to stop laughing at that because I don't understand what they're trying to say, what their point is. It seems like they'd be on Mr. Trump's side, if anything, and instead, it's the exact opposite. Like, it's clearly not very well thought through. Their protest really doesn't make a whole lot of logical sense.
Yeah, this is a gentleman, Damaso Morales. He's a foreign nations expert at the National Autonomous University of Mexico. He says Mexico tends to be a nationalist country when it is attacked from the outside. I don't think anyone's attacking it, but He says, throughout our history, we have wrapped ourselves in the flag and thrown ourselves into a nationalism that could even be irrational. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a strange story from the standpoint of, again, they're saying that they're a great country and they're the greatest country in the world and so forth. Great. Stay put.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, it is kind of a way of stealth undermining America, if anything, because if people come over illegally, they're sending almost all of the money that they make back to Mexico. So it's not helping the American economy by any means. That's all that money, that billions of dollars probably are going back to Mexico, to the families who are still back there.
That's a good point, too. There is some of that going on. But anyway, just a strange sort of it's hard to keep heads or tails out of some of the protesting and what people are upset about. But I just thought they're actually agreeing with President Trump.
Right.
Sort of. It's strange story. Here's an interesting one. This is a sort of a health tip. It's from the New York Post. People that are a little bit older probably remember all the talk about vegetable oil back in the day and that it was better for you. Well, this headline from the New York Post says eating vegetable oils could lead to fatigue, migraines, and dementia. That's what they think anyway. And of course, studies change all the time. And if you don't like this one, just wait, and I'm sure there'll be a new one. But there's probably some truth to this. They say in the middle of the 20th century, concerned by the growing heart attack epidemic, Americans ditched butter and other saturated fats in favor of vegetable oils. So I think people remember that. There was big campaigns about that, and you know, you're not supposed to eat the egg yolks and just other random things. They were looking at fats as being bad for you. Which some are, but according to Dr. Catherine Shanahan, author of a new book titled Deep Nutrition, Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food. Not talking about your blue jeans, by the way.
That's what I thought at first.
My jeans? Well, maybe that's true because you'd have better weight.
Exactly.
You know, things would fit better. That's part two of the book, I guess. She says, they say to understand the problem with the substances, which she says, this author says, she's a doctor, I guess, which includes canola, palm, corn, soy, sunflower, safi flour, which I have not heard of, cottonseed, rice, bran, and grapeseed oils, but not olive, coconut, avocado, or peanut, according to her anyway. Shanahan says you have to understand why we began eating vegetable oils in the first place. In the 1950s, we were told we couldn't have saturated fats. And we stopped eating butter and natural fats, but still craved fatty foods, so we turned to vegetable oils. And then restaurants started using them because they're really, really cheap. And in most places, I think, even today, there might be some change to this, but a lot of places still use vegetable oils. And she says, while unsaturated vegetable oils seemed healthy at first, recent research has shown that the processed oils may be more destructive than the fats they replaced. One reevaluation of a heart study from the 1970s, published in April in the British Medical Journal, questioned the original finding that consuming vegetable oils instead of saturated fats can lower the risk of heart disease and death. In fact, it found that consuming too much vegetable oil may actually increase the risk of heart disease. And one of the problems is when they heat the oil to a certain temperature, the way it breaks down can cause quite a few problems.
It sounds like it's pretty difficult to ever figure out what's good, what's bad. We're having basically every few years a war on a different product, and then a few years later we'll figure out that product is not nearly as bad as we had once thought. Same thing happened with the egg yolks and with the butter, where we thought butter was a terrible thing, but actually if it's natural butter, it's a really good thing.
Yeah, right. It's I think that's kind of the rule of thumb. If it's a naturally occurring organic matter that is edible,
yeah,
it's probably good for you. And if it's chemically engineered and they're getting in the mix on it, scientists and trying to change the way things are, probably going to have some problems.
And if you have an obsessive amount of anything natural as well, that could also be damaging. So the natural things in balance, and then we keep it simple and everyone's more healthy, it seems like.
Yeah, for sure. They say, this author, Shanahan, says, the way the oils have been treated strips away the antioxidants. As a result, the balance between disease-fighting antioxidants and free radicals is tipped in the favor of free radicals, which have been shown to cause diseases and cancers and other things. The European Food Safety Authority issued a report in May warning against high levels of contaminants in palm oil an inexpensive vegetable oil used in Nutella, if that's how you say that, margarine, and Girl Scout cookies. Oh, no. The Girl Scout cookies, among other treats. The report cautioned against potential gerotoxins and carcinogens that are created when the oil is heated over roughly 400 degrees. So if you like those Girl Scout cookies, I don't know. Might have to think about it.
What a disappointment.
There's a ton of calories in those things.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think anyone's buying them under the assumption that this is a healthy alternative to to something else. I think people buy them because, well, the girls asked you for the money, first of all. And then second of all, they are delicious, I guess.
Yeah, and addictive and probably really, really, really sweet, depending on which ones you get. So,
yeah.
But they only come around occasionally. Yeah. I don't usually get them at my door, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we've had Girl Scouts come around once in a while and to try to sell them. And somebody in our neighborhood used to have a sign out where it was there all the time. And in some ways, that might be a better way to do it, because mm-hmm. that way you're not bothering people. They know where to go.
Yeah.
But you would want to put out like a time, you know. You don't want somebody knocking on your door at midnight. I really want those Girl Scout cookies. We're not open for business. So anyway, there's pretty much any fast foodish type of food or anything processed, you're going to have a lot of these oils in there. And I think some people that are a little more into the health have known for a long time it's not good for you,
mm-hmm.
causes problems. But they're learning more about it.
Yeah, and another issue is just the fact that we have to send our goods such a long way cross country now. So a lot of artificial preservatives have to be put into them so that they actually last long enough for the entire journey. That's a big reason why, you know, farmers now put pesticides on all their crops so that they at least last a little longer, or they don't die as quickly before they get to the consumer.
Yeah, you know, I found that to be true when I was in Ireland, and they sell Guinness beer there, kind of famous for that. And it tastes different there than it does here, at least in my opinion, and it tasted much better there.
Right, yeah.
Over here, there's a little bit of a, I don't know, bitter taste to it to some extent. And over there, it was very smooth, much smoother. And but I think it's because of this how much longer it has to last and what they have to do to it for it to be over here. I don't know all the ins and outs on that. Somebody might be an expert out there on it. But to me, it tasted better when it was over there, because I think it was fresher. And it wasn't treated in the same way to make it last longer, I'm thinking.
That would also make sense, too, because obviously people who go to Ireland, they want to tour the factory there, and they think that Guinness beer is the very best. Here, it's just another beer. It doesn't really stand out as much over here, probably would over there.
It's not as good as, I was going to make a joke, but it's funny because there has been sort of a trend towards these American microbrews and things. And it's funny because even at some of the local stores, I see different beer brands that they're selling as kind of like, this is a specialty beer. And I know where it's brewed because I grew up like just down the road from the brewery. And I'm like, that stuff? I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
But it wasn't considered anything, you know, out of the ordinary. It was just like your regular beer. And then, but now because of like the marketing campaigns and stuff, it's being rebranded as like elite and special. And I know better. I know where they brewed it. It's not true.
Just depends on where you are. I guess different things take on different priorities.
If it's considered exotic,
yeah.
Usually then it's like, right. We'll pay a premium for that. And so anyway, it's kind of funny how that happens. But anyway, pay attention to the oils, I guess, and it could cause some problems depending on what you're having. Here's a kind of a good story. Hopefully it has a good ending. It seems like it's having a good ending. Boston Marathon bombing survivor to marry the firefighter who saved her. It's like a movie.
That's fantastic.
They're actually writing a book about it, so I hope it's they really love each other, and then the book is an extension of that as opposed to the other way around.
A marriage of convenience.
Yeah, I'm too much of a cynic, I guess, but they say on the day of the bombing in April 2013, Roseanne Sodia, I think her name is, 48, a long-distance runner, was a spectator near the marathon finish line when, of course, those pressure cooker bombs went off. I think we all remember that terrible day. Mike Materia, 37, so he's a little bit younger. He rushed to her aid and comforted her during the ride to Massachusetts General Hospital in a police vehicle. She said, "I asked him if I was going to die, and he told me that I was okay, that I only had a flesh wound," she recalled. And so the firefighter visited a couple of days later and made a great impression on the lady's mother, who was there trying to play matchmaker, even as just even after this bomb had gone off, she was in recovering in intensive care. But they ended up going on a few dates. I guess they started dating in June 2013. A month later, they spent the 4th of July on Nantucket, and then last month he proposed on a lookout deck at the island's whaling museum. And in March, they plan to release a book called Perfect Strangers, no relation to the 80s sitcom that some of you may remember with Bucky Bartokomous, about four lives that intersected during the bombing. So a tragic, tragic event, but it looks like something good came out of it. And this is like kind of a movie script.
Yeah, and I forget how many people the Boston bombing actually killed. I don't think it was very many at all, so... More what those guys did was bring people together, it sounds like.
A lot of people had limbs.
Yeah, they got
damaged.
Mangled at least.
Yeah, so it's a horrible thing that happened. But kind of a neat story there, and hopefully things work out for them moving forward. There is a survey that was done recently about social media, and they have found that social media makes people antisocial and jealous. Are you surprised by that?
Antisocial media, what should be called.
Yeah, antisocial media. Participants were surveyed on the types of items they post on social media and the types of posts from others that have positive or negative influences on their moods. And they were also asked about things they might do if it meant obtaining more likes from their followers. How far would they go to become popular in the social media world? And many participants, they say, made it clear that social media made them jealous of others. Nearly 60% of the participants viewed a friend as having a better life than their own simply by seeing that friend's social media activity. And almost half were upset after viewing photos from a friend's happy holiday celebration. So it didn't make people happy for the most part. It made them jealous. Maybe they should change like Facebook to... The grass is greener. They call it that.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a better life than me.
That's exactly what it is. It'd be funny to see an account that's more honest, where the people document actually the bad things that happen to them as well. So we're not all under the illusion that everyone just has a better life.
Yeah. Some people have taken to calling it fake book because people could be making things up, I guess. This report is from studyfinds.org, by the way. You can see the rest of it there. Researchers ultimately found that many people will go to harmful lengths simply to win likes from followers, which is it's bizarre, but that's the pull of popularity is very strong. They say this study has shown us that in order to generate more likes and feel better about the time they spend on social media, people are being tempted into sharing more information, potentially putting themselves and the people they care about at risk. Here are a few of the other findings from this study. 61% of the participants felt worse after finding out someone unfriended them, and 59% were upset after someone posted a negative or critical comment on their profile. I don't know that they needed a study to tell you that. Who's going to be happy if somebody says, you know, something critical? Of course you're going to be unhappy about that.
Unless you posted it on purpose just to get a negative response.
Yeah, that could be. That could be too. 57% said after going on social media, they felt that someone they follow has a better life than they do. Yeah.
There are plenty of people out there who probably have better lives than other people.
or they're going to pretend that they do. Yeah, for sure. 59% said they felt sad after seeing photos from a party they didn't attend posted on social media. And 45% were unhappy after seeing photos from a friend's happy outing of some kind.
Why can't we just be happy for each other? Why can't we all just rejoice in the joys of others?
Human nature. Human nature. Just it doesn't matter what the platform is. There's a tendency to be jealous. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the way it goes. 58% were angered by a photo a friend posted of them online that they didn't want made public. Yeah, that happens sometimes. I've even had that happen where I just saw a picture of me from something, and I'm like, where did that come from? I didn't sign off on that. Thankfully, it's not been anything, you know, bad. It's just been me standing somewhere. But still, it is a little bit, it feels a little odd, you know?
Yeah, that happened to me recently as well. And it's like, oh, well, that's kind of strange. But obviously not a huge deal to be made about it because it's just a picture of what I look like or something.
Yeah. It'd be kind of funny if you went to somebody's house, you know, for dinner or something, and they had a big picture of you on the wall. you'd be a little surprised. Like, why is that here?
Definitely.
That's the same thing.
It is the same
thing. They're posting it to the world. 54% on this study felt upset when no one liked or commented on a photo they posted.
Ouch.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess it's better to be, they always say it's better to be disliked than to be ignored. Mm-hmm. So that would be sad. You post a picture and no one likes it or comments.
Yeah, you always want to spark some sort of emotion when people think of you instead of, that guy's boring.
Right. Yeah. Boredom book. That'll be the new that'll be my page. 42% were jealous when they saw a friend had more likes or comments than they did on a status update. Status update. Still alive.
Still single.
like. Oh, that's classic. Just 31% of people aren't bothered by the number of likes they receive on a post. I even kind of wonder if that's even legitimate. I would think more people would be bothered.
Yeah, probably. They're probably just hiding their insecurities.
24% of men said they worry that if they get few likes, their friends will think that they are unpopular, compared to 1 in 6 women, 17%. And to get more likes, 32% of men said they'd post something funny about a friend, compared to 21% of women. Mm. So it's always a popularity game, and it's a time consumer. You know, I don't know. Some people would maybe feel that it's a good use of their time. Others maybe not. But one way or the other, it just has a way of eating up your days.
Yeah, and it's almost like an obligation to check it because of the people who are expecting some sort of a post from you or at some point instead of 3 or 4 months of silence in a row. And then also we've seen those types of technologies taken to the extreme as well, where someone's doing something vile on Facebook Live and they see all the likes flooding in, so they keep doing whatever they're doing.
Yeah, it's amazing how the goal of being popular or being liked in some fashion can kind of override almost anything.
Yeah.
Sometimes with some people, especially when people are younger and you know, maybe not quite as established in their thinking in some ways. This is this is kind of a funny, well, funny in a sense, but not funny in another. Of course this happened. This is from Heat Street. A woman calls police to report her drug dealer for hiking prices. Sometimes people don't think about what they're doing.
And she was on the drugs when she called.
Probably so. This is in Australia. A woman called her local police department to complain that her drug dealer was ripping her off with an unexpected price hike. The unnamed woman rang officers in the remote Northern Territory, Australia, in the hope they would intervene over the cost of marijuana. The drug is illegal everywhere in Australia. So
they'll intervene all right. It won't just be about the price of the drug, though.
They're definitely going to intervene. This fact appears to have occurred to the woman partway through her call as she hung up when officers asked for more details. Oh, interesting. Give us some more details. Bemused officers shared the news of the call in a Facebook post, adding that anybody else suffering similar problems should give us a call. The post said this. A woman called police to complain about the price of marijuana in her community, reporting that her local drug dealer had asked for more money than the usual. Completely offended, the woman demanded that police investigate this outrageous price hike. When asked for further details, the woman hung up. If you know a drug dealer who is ripping you off, give us a call. We'd love to help. That's from Australia. So the lady didn't think it through. She wanted the police to come and investigate. Oh, they'll investigate, all right. So kind of interesting story there from Australia. She'd be okay in some states in the U.S.
Yeah,
it's legal
she,
someplace.
She might want to move here now.
Actually, I saw a story yesterday. I believe marijuana is legal now in Maine. Mm. They passed that. In a related note, over half of the students entering college in Maine have to take remedial math and English, highest in the country.
Well, then, I wonder if there's a correlation somehow.
Just two little tidbits of information. It's amazing what people do with drugs and stuff. There's another story yesterday about they found, I forget how many pounds it was. It was, I think, thousands of pounds of drugs, cocaine, I think it was, in the front, like the nose of an airplane. I think it was a commercial aircraft. who put it there? Why? You know, amazing. But people do all kinds of just ridiculous things. And like this lady, sometimes they just call the police for intervention. So Police, I'm sure, got a little bit of a kick out of that. Key David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England, and the Trumpet Hour program with Joel Hilliker. All that coming your way today. You can get the archives of those programs live at KPC or at kpcg.fm if you can't catch them live, or one of the replays here on 101.3. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live. I'm Dwight Falk. Grant Turgeon's here. Abraham Blondo has stopped by. Hello, Abraham.
Hello.
Good to see you. You can follow us on Twitter at KPCGFM. And if you'd like to send us any comments, please do that. Email those in to comments at kpcg.fm. Super Bowl's coming up, Grant. And so the quarterbacks are in the news. Tom Brady. This is a write-up from USA Today you have for us. Nancy Armour says, Tom Brady has some explaining to do on Donald Trump. So I guess she's not all that interested in the X's and O's of the football game. She wants to know about his relationship with President Trump.
I hope she's not there during this Super Bowl week interrogating him. She probably doesn't deserve to be there when a lot of people would love to be there and would actually ask him some useful questions.
Related to football.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he apparently 2 years ago made the egregious mistake of having a Make America Great Again hat in his locker. He's never said anything about politics, his personal beliefs. He basically runs away screaming when a reporter asks him anything that doesn't have to do with football. But because he had this hat in his locker and because he has admitted after some rough questions that Mr. Trump is actually his friend, well, now he needs to really face up, just like the great Colin Kaepernick has with his beliefs.
Right. Well, it's interesting because, like you mentioned, and I haven't followed it all that closely, but from what I have seen about Tom Brady, he doesn't seem to speak that openly about his politics, probably because he knows they're unpopular. But you do have a right in the United States of America to have personal beliefs in relation to a lot of things, including political affiliation. And if he's not out there, you know, knocking down his neighbor's door and, you know, yelling about everything, he's allowed. I mean, he's not disturbing anybody. He's minding his own business,
right?
And so I just don't know. I mean, I know why they're doing it, because the media is very much anti Donald Trump, President Trump. But at the same time, let Tom Brady be. You know, it's it's his personal beliefs. He's not out there yelling about it. Why do they have to stir it up?
Yeah, and why would any athlete voluntarily provoke the outrage of millions of people by giving their views? We've actually seen that from people on the left, because at least they have the mouthpiece of the media that will praise them for it. But if you're not on the left and you say anything, it's going to sound like the world's crashing down around you, because the media is going to be condemning you vociferously.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess he's going to have to take questions. And that's what happens in Super Bowl media days. There's a lot of questions, and I guess you can only ask so many football questions. Then they usually end up asking some pretty ridiculous questions. It's kind of become an event unto itself. And usually they're just kind of foolish or silly questions. But when it starts getting political, it gets very emotional. And, you just want to, I would think he would just want to concentrate on the game and not get into the rest of it.
Yeah. How about whenever any athlete speaks out? I don't think there's a single sports fan who's like, yes, finally we get to hear what this guy's beliefs on politics are, because that's what he was paid to do, is give his beliefs on politics. I think pretty much everyone feels uncomfortable by it or doesn't like it. They might say, oh, hey, that's nice, he agrees with what I think, but we don't prefer them talking about those things.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with this author and what she writes on, but you know, you could see, I know they have their editorial meetings and they pitch their ideas. And, you know, if you were working at one of these mainstream outlets, you, of course, would come with something like this. You know, like, hey, everybody, I've got the juicy, you know, story that fits into our narrative here. And I can understand why they're going after these things, because they want to be accepted by their peers in the media. They want to have their story published. They want to go viral with their big headline. But it's just a lot of trash. There's no value to it, I don't think. I mean, you could write this story about anybody. I know Tom Brady's a public figure, but, you know, what's your personal belief on politics? Well, it's a personal belief. Leave it alone, I would think.
Yeah, my prediction is that Tom Brady will win, because Tom Brady pretty much wins at everything in his life, it would appear. So that's my prediction from all this, is that Tom Brady will come away stronger from this article than he did before, just like he does with everything else in his life.
Well, yeah, I think it's a passing headline. My guess is he'll just kind of ignore it and move on, and people will just move on too, because you know how it is with the media and the way they talk about, you know, people that they're interviewing or they talk to them. They keep kind of trying to get you to say something. They want that gotcha moment where they provoke and provoke and provoke, and then you say something, and then they can plaster that headline out there. And he's probably smart enough. He's learned from the master, Bill Belichick, to say nothing, to be inaudible at all times and wear just like a hood over your head.
It's pretty amazing how Bill Belichick can do that as well. But that's exactly what I'm pretty sure most people want to see when they tune into sports. They don't necessarily want to find out that their hero has a different ideology. That kind of is disappointing to a lot of people when they find that out anyway.
Well, right. And, you know, you look back at Michael Jordan, very successful athlete, even more successful selling kind of an image, selling shoes. And people would get on him and say, you need to speak out more about social issues, political issues. And he had a great comeback for it. He said, look, I sell sneakers to Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, and think what you will of it. But he knew that he needed to sell his stuff. He wanted to. He was a good businessman. Still is, I think. And he wasn't going to get into the rest of that. And some people ping him for that and say, well, you didn't stand up for your beliefs. Well, none of these people are standing up for their beliefs. They're just wanting to fit in with the crowd.
Right.
And so I thought he was always smart in the way he handled it. And he even took some flack when the police thing came up, because he did say something here, Michael Jordan, but he gave money to both sides. He tried to play it neutral.
Yeah.
And he got flack for that too. So I don't know. You can't really win unless you totally sell out to the media and what they want you to say.
Yeah, that's really the issue. Tom Brady appears to be one of the last remnants of the old guard of athletes who never spoke about politics or never spoke about social issues or current events, because they realized that that was not their lane in life.
I mean, right.
You can't imagine that at any other job. You know, a plumber shows up and he gets out his bullhorn and he starts ranting about Mr. Trump to all of his coworkers. That's basically what these people are doing by going on Twitter and attacking someone's character just because of what they believe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to use that same, you know, analogy, can you imagine showing up to do a job and the first thing they ask you is about all your political beliefs? You'd be like, hey, I'm just here to check out the sink. I don't, you know, you wouldn't want to get into it. You just want to do your job.
Especially when there's actual ramifications for your job, especially in Hollywood. If you ever speak out conservatively, you could actually really take a hit professionally.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I don't know. He's probably handled it okay. I haven't seen everything he said, but he could just tell him, well, I haven't had a lot of time to think about it. I've been too busy winning. He could flash all of the Super Bowl rings.
That's probably what he's implying a lot of the time. I just want to give an example of how militant this writer from USA Today is. She references this interview from Tom Brady where he was on a local radio station in Boston, and he basically said, well, you know, just because I've been friends with Mr. Trump for a really long time doesn't mean that we share all of the exact same beliefs. We're not the same two people. We're not robots.
Sure.
Is that okay if I agree in some areas or disagree in other areas and have a friend who maybe doesn't share exactly all of my viewpoints? As she says here, no, it's not. She said, there are plenty of people in the NFL who are Trump supporters, but no one was as public as Brady. I don't see how that's possible. Just because, and the only thing she says about it is because he happened to have a hat in his locker 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, and again, that's where it's an impossibility to say anything about views, because they're going to automatically say, just because you happen to be friendly with somebody, you know, you agree on every single thing.
Right.
And what about her? I mean, this author, is she a supporter of Colin Kaepernick? Because he supports Chavez, right? No, like a lot of dictators. Does she support that?
Well, yes.
Yeah, yes, she does. Yeah.
Here you go. She's actually defending him pretty blatantly here. She says, he's had insults, slurs, and worse directed at him. He was blamed for the drop in TV ratings early in the season. One person last week even tried to say Trump's election was partly the result of Kaepernick's protests. And then she talks about how it would have been easy for him to put his personal beliefs aside and just do his job, but he can't do that in this climate. Let's just remember, he had socks with pigs in police uniforms. That's what he was wearing to practice. He was wearing shirts with Fidel Castro on them. This guy is pretty much a communist, and yet we're going to act like he's some American hero.
Yeah. He was supporting these anti-police movements, and then the police officers got killed. Mm-hmm. Well, is he responsible for that? I mean, the same line of thinking would be that he is, if Tom Brady's responsible for everything President Trump does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. And the thing, too, with Kaepernick is I think people that have looked into it know that he didn't always feel that way. He was radicalized because he got a new girlfriend.
Right. from Egypt.
Don't make it out like it's some awakening. It's, you know, he just kind of went with the crowd.
He had white parents. He's mixed race, but he was raised by white parents who have condemned him for talking about the things he has. He's come across, at the very least, come across as anti-police and anti-military, even if he says he's not.
Yeah, I mean, really, you look at athletes, and if you just want to keep it into the realm of athletics, which is where it should probably stay, you know, you could look at somebody that's successful, and you know, if you're raising your kids, you say, well, hey, look, I don't know everything about this person, but if you look at the way they play this game, they do this well, they've been successful, they've dedicated themselves, that's a good example. You can look to that. Mm-hmm. You know, what was Colin Kaepernick's record? You know, would he win, like, 2 games? I mean, he's not even good at his actual job. And they want his opinion on stuff that he's not even doing. Like, the stuff he's paid to do, he doesn't do well.
Yeah.
And then they want his opinion on everything else, too. That's amazing. It's just amazing, the media outrage on that stuff. So you can't even watch a football game anymore without it getting political. And that's part of why they think some of the NFL ratings drop. People got sick of being talked to by the journalists they knew everything.
Well, the progressives are trying to suck all the joy out of sports. They're trying to inject their agenda into what people thought was apolitical before.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how he deals with the rest of Super Bowl week. And I've never been a huge Brady fan necessarily, but he's good at playing football. And beyond that, I don't know what the guy does. He's kind of stayed to himself for the most part.
Who cares what he
does? Yeah.
He's a good guy in general.
He's not out there, you know, talking down the police and everything else. Mm-hmm. So, and he's the villain now somehow. Craziness. Absolutely crazy. Well, thanks for that story, Grant. Appreciate that. Abraham, you've got a story for us here from the New York Times. This is kind of one of the big ones today. Trump nominates Neil Gorsuch. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Gorsuch? Okay.
Exactly.
Oh, good. That's what it looks like, but you never know, you know, to the Supreme Court. I don't know much about this guy, obviously, because I just barely knew how to say his last name. But I do know that he is considered to be pretty conservative. He's kind of supposed to be the heir apparent.
Yes.
To the open seat there as far as a conservative. And so what are some of the details about him and how this nomination is going?
Yeah, so yesterday on primetime, President Trump nominated him. And Neil Gorsuch, he's a very famous judge. He has very high, respectable record. He's on the Court of Appeals. He was nominated there in 2006. And so he is a conservative. And so they, a lot of people were happy with this nomination on the Republican side. And as we'll get to, it caused a firestorm on the Democratic side.
Who could he have nominated that wouldn't have caused a firestorm? You know?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And that's what we'll get to this. It is, I think, sad to see how politicized the Supreme Court has become to the point where it's not a matter of law. It's a matter of what political party will get their agenda pushed through. And that's, I think, the most dangerous part of all this. But Neil Gorsuch, is a little background on him. He is known for his style in writing. He writes very simply, but he's a great writer in his different opinions on the different matters. His most famous one is that he came down in favor for Hobby Lobby back a few years ago when there was a controversy over them providing contraceptives to their staff because their leaders are Christian. So
yeah.
He came down in favor of them, which is very influential in the case. He just has a flawless record. There isn't really a whole lot of dirt, you could say, to pull up on him because he just has been very successful. He's well-respected. Even some Democrats are highly supportive of him because he is one of the few judges who have a spotless record.
Yeah. Nancy Pelosi doesn't like it.
Yeah.
She's angry. Which isn't surprising.
Yeah. So does Senator Chuck Schumer of New York. He said this after the nomination. Now more than ever, we need a Supreme Court justice who is independent, excuse ideology, who will preserve our democracy, protect fundamental rights, and will stand up to a president who has already shown a willingness to bend the Constitution. So
is he talking about President Obama?
He should be, but that's
oh,
that's the great irony. He's talking about President Trump. He's a Democratic leader in the Senate, I believe. And so Chuck Schumer is very much against him, or at least he wants to really extremely vet him. But and there's a lot of left-wing advocacy groups, such as pro-abortion groups and others, who are already launching protests against his nomination. And you have a lot of pro-life Tea Party activists launching protests in favor of him and campaigns to get him in. So it's causing this big firestorm, and it's really over nothing. Since Gorsuch, he fills all the qualifications. He has a very distinguished record. And there's the main thing is, like Nancy Pelosi said, is that he has to fall into the mainstream, quote unquote, for him to be acceptable for the Supreme Court. And he does.
Yeah.
In any respect, there's some senators have been calling him extreme and radical. But the biggest thing he does is, as in his own words, is he sticks to the Constitution. He as one writer said, he is made in the image of Scalia. He is pretty much thinks the same way on almost everything. And so the Democrats, well, they're trying to figure out something to try to pin him down on, but they can't. And so they're making up these fabricated sensationalist headlines about his character when none of it's true.
Yeah, it seems like the tactic from the left is to come out and throw out these very general terms like anti-democracy. But they never really explain what that is.
Right.
Or they'll say, well, they're radical. When in fact the left is the more radical. I mean, it's not like either side has got it right, but at the same time, the left is much, they have moved further down the line as far as being lawless. And so it's kind of it's an interesting thing, because if a politician comes along, or in this case a Supreme Court nominee, and they do actually try on some level to stick to the Constitution, to stick to actual law, they're considered the radicals now, or extreme. You know, you're extreme because you actually stick to the law. So it's interesting, but the same sort of expressions or descriptive phrases have been used against other more conservative people too. You know, anti-democracy, this isn't what America stands for, very general sort of comments. And you know, they really should get back to that. Like that's a question I think the media should ask. Well, okay, well, what does America stand for? Or you know, what what is the actual law we're going to look at here to determine whether or not somebody should do this job? But it's just a bunch of generalities, and they never really get down to what they're getting at, except for the fact that I think people know what they're getting at is they just want everyone to be, I think, like they do, and be lawless and let anything go and keep with that radical left ideology.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's whenever you talk about legal theory, it can get really complicated quickly, but... And it takes a lot of people don't understand it as high as the level of people we're discussing here. But I think the big thing to remember when they bring all these words and these phrases and all their different ideological words is that, in essence, one side wants to be progressive. So they want to, the liberal side, they want to change the laws in order to allow more than what the Constitution allows for. The other side, especially someone like Gorsuch, who is a constitutionalist, or they believe in the original interpretation of the Constitution. They believe in that if that change, if there has to be progressive change has to go through the legislature, has to go through Congress, has to go through the state legislators, and it can't go through the Supreme Court. Supreme Court isn't there to make laws. They're there to make sure everything is upheld by the Constitution. And so there's two different ways of thinking there. And as we've seen over the past 50 years, the progressives have been very successful in legislating through the Supreme Court. Abortion, LGBT rights, climate change, a lot of these different things have been legislated through the Supreme Court to where the Supreme Court has said this is what the Constitution says when it doesn't. And then the Congress has no power. The states have no power to decide for themselves if this law is good or not. And so that's what this, that's really the core of the argument.
And so it'll be a battle, I guess.
Yes.
And the Democrats are gearing up to fight this. What has to happen for it to go through?
So basically, for him to be confirmed, you need 60 votes in the Senate. The Republicans have 52. The Democrats have 48. So they need about 8 Democrats to vote in favor. The Democrats, some of them anyway, are threatening to do a filibuster to block his nomination, much like the Republicans did to Merrick Garland a few months ago. However, lo and behold, the Democrats changed some rules to where you need less votes to confirm executive appointments. And so the Republicans could change the rules and get him appointed no matter what. So it's a losing battle for the Democrats. One way or the other, he will be appointed. Ironically, it's because they changed the rules themselves while President Obama was in power that will allow the Republicans to do this. So he'll probably get in one way or the other. But I think what will be interesting to see is the fuss put up by the Democratic side and see how the media falls in on it, because a lot of them say, no, he shouldn't be confirmed because Donald Trump is dangerous. He's not able to appoint someone. Or that the Republicans didn't confirm Merrick Garland, so they shouldn't confirm Gorsuch, when it's completely ridiculous reasoning. Because there's two interesting points with this. Number one is that when Gorsuch was being appointed in 2006 to the Court of Appeals, Senator Obama, Senator Biden, and I think Senator Pelosi all voted in favor of him to be appointed. So there isn't a whole lot of room to oppose him now when their own leaders all voted for him. They all believed he was very well qualified. And the second thing is that the Democrats have a much longer history of frustrating the executive in their appointments. The most famous case is Justice Bork, when Ronald Reagan appointed him nominated him. The Democrats fought him tooth and nail and destroyed his reputation in a much more destructive way than anything the Republicans did with Merrick Garland. I mean, they just chose not to appoint him. It had nothing to do with his character. The Democrats destroyed Robert Bork to where it's actually a word now. Getting borked is actually a word in the English language now. So I think hopefully it goes through quickly, because it will help the Supreme Court function as it should. And it will probably give a 5-4 advantage to the conservatives in the Supreme Court. But I think the most interesting thing to see will be how the media falls in and how, if they complicate things or not.
Yeah, it is so ironic that a lot of the checks and balances of the government have kind of been pushed aside. And there's, of course, that's bad no matter what side you're on. But then you can see why the left was so nervous about Republicans getting in or winning, or Donald Trump winning, because they have given more power to the president, and like you said, changing a few rules and other things too. But that comes now; it's coming back to haunt them, because the other side now can do what they want, and it wasn't designed to be that way. Can you imagine something actually going through in this nation without there being all this division? Like, I can't. Can't think of anything that people could agree on. I really can't think of probably one thing that's, you know, has some importance to it where you'd actually have an agreement. It seems like no matter what happens, there's gonna be a clash, and it's I don't know if it's 50-50, but it's pretty close to that.
Yeah, there's no room for compromise. It's everything is a battle. to where there, it's everything one side does is evil, and what the other side does is good. There's no middle ground, and it's just really interesting to see this unfold because it's creating such a political climate to where either creates gridlock or it creates turmoil because you can't have people protesting every single policy of the government and have the country function properly. As you said, I think one in the great irony of history perhaps might be that President Obama, for everything he's done, he'll be remembered as the person who paved the way for the power of President Trump.
Right.
Because the Trump administration is profiting from all the checks and balances President Obama destroyed or took all the way. And now the Democrats are suffering from it. And the Democrats, I think as well, the media is not covering. Democrats are struggling to find any relevant reason to or relevant organization to combat Donald Trump. Because in so far, most people are in favor of the things Donald Trump has been doing, even the probation, the travel probation.
Mm-hmm.
More Americans are in favor of it than against it. So I think a lot of their pleas and the protests and the bleeding hearts are falling on deaf ears because a majority of the people who don't have a voice actually support Donald Trump. And so, but if you look at the media, it wouldn't appear that way. It looks like the whole country's united against Donald Trump. By the way they portray it.
Right. They said, you see a lot of headlines, and I saw one today where I think they were talking about the travel ban, like, you know, it sparked, you know, outrage globally and all. But I've seen other headlines where a lot of, you know, people in the middle America, I guess, they really didn't care. They thought it was fine. But if you were to just believe the narrative, you'd think it was, you know, everything was this great outrage. And a lot of people don't really feel that way, and that the election was the main event that showed that. Because you remember, or you know, a couple of days even, or the day of the election, it was, this is going to be the biggest landslide in the history of all elections, and the Republican Party will, you know, disappear immediately, and then it completely didn't go that way. But they haven't changed; they haven't learned their lesson in the media, and so they're certainly doing all they can to just make everything divisive. They're certainly not helping to unify anybody.
Yeah, and in reality, they're the ones who perhaps are undermining democracy even more than anything President Trump has done. Because they're the ones really supplanting his power and his ability to keep law and order. Going back to Neil Gorsuch, Judge Gorsuch, it'll be interesting to see if the media can just disrupt him and create a bunch of sensationalist headlines about his appointment and see if they can disrupt the functioning of government, especially with the Republicans in power. Republicans will get this through no matter what the Democrats do. And so I think they'll struggle to find the legitimate battle cry in this instance. And then what's more is that with the Supreme Court possibly going to the conservative side, a lot of the rulings on climate change, immigration, made by President Obama could be overturned. Even Roe versus Wade could be overturned. So this could signal the age of a lot of change in America, back towards conservatism, perhaps. I don't think it will. I think everything will keep moving to the left. But it could, if there is a lot of change, it will destroy everything the radical left has been working for decades. And I think that's why they're fighting so hard, is because they realize there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, there's a write-up today where there is speculation that President Obama wants to come out against Donald Trump. He sort of did the other day, but not directly. And the speculation, anyway, is that he wants to say something and do something. But he thinks he has one shot. And even the person they were interviewing, which I think is somebody from the left, he said, well, he could do it. I don't know what difference it would make. And so he's kind of got, I guess, maybe he's built up a little equity from his time in office with some people anyway. And he's got like one shot to spend it, he thinks, and make some big statement. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with it. He has no power. I mean, what's he going to do? It'd probably be pretty risky for him, because if he does say something and nobody cares or responds, then you've kind of come out and made a little bit of a fool of yourself, I guess.
and then you can't say anything after that.
Yeah.
So, but definitely very different ideologies that have been in the last 8 years and now is here in this current administration. So the division continues. It's going to be quite interesting to see. I mean, it's just like even energy-wise, can they keep this up every day? Can we have, like, battles? Can the media battle, you know, against the current administration every single day? I don't know. You think you get tired of it after a while.
Yeah, well, even last night I was reading a book about in Great Britain. This actually happened before World War One, where there were some political battles that got so heated, people died. Not the politicians, but the protesters. And they even tried to, some politicians had to run from mobs, jump over walls, hide in police stations while the mobs were trying to hunt them down. So, I mean, that's, and that was some extraordinary times in the history of Great Britain. And that's kind of what we're going to see in America. We're getting to that point today where we're becoming so unsettled in our politics to where it could become very, I don't know, disjointed to where people don't want to watch anymore. So they're not informed, or just this Congress can't function. So the executive has to start doing more and more to keep the country functioning.
Yeah, it's the more divisive it gets, right, it does kind of go back to the president, doesn't it, in some ways. There's a really good write-up at thetrumpet.com, not totally related to this Supreme Court nomination, but it fits in with the division. It's from, I guess, a day or two ago. Hysterical reaction to immigration order further divides two Americas. It does highlight the media, the division in America, what's going on. And also on that article, there is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show link where it talks about that same topic as well. Just gives you a better understanding as to what's happening in this country and, you know, what we can expect to see moving forward. And it's you'd like to say, well, it looks like it'll get better, but it's not heading that way.
Yeah, it seems like every step forward is actually a step backwards to where it doesn't matter what political party a leader's in office, everything's just getting worse and worse.
Yeah, and because whoever is in power has more power than ever, imagine the next election if you get there. I don't even want to think about that. That's all the time we have for today's program. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Hirsch, and Abraham Lundo, have a great rest of your Wednesday. See you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.